Hey everyone, Kevin here, and welcome to a special bonus episode of the Drinking Liberally podcast. This will be the first in a series of bonus episodes that are less structured than our weekly shows. We'll be focusing less on the news of the week and more on what makes our guests tick politically. This week we have a great guest, a gentleman by the name of Massimo, who is kind enough to spend some time talking shop with us. So we'll hear what his top voting issues are, how his background growing up in Western Europe gave him a unique perspective on the term socialism, as well as who he is supporting in 2020. So grab your favorite adult beverage, sit back, and enjoy. So Jeff and I are here sitting with Massimo, who is from Hoboken, New Jersey, decided to join us for our debate party. Welcome.
Thank you.
If you don't mind, we're looking to find out what makes you tick politically.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we have a couple questions.
Absolutely.
What sways your vote politically? What are like the top three issues for you?
Top three issues right now... global warming or climate change, whatever you want to call it. Constitutional changes, because the United States is stalling right now in a bad situation. I think Donald Trump demonstrated how weak the American Constitution can be, which is a big problem right now. And definitely, of course, whatever I already experimented in my life, I will explain later, which is universal healthcare. And tuition-free college, different kind of taxations, a lot of things that are related to a completely different kind of experience I come from that bring me to contribute. I want to contribute in the United States, now that I'm also American citizen, in a way to bring my experience on the floor. And rather than hear people that tell me, go back where you're coming from, now
right.
I'm here, I consider myself American as well, and Italian, as I said, dual citizenship.
Yeah, so we led off with you that you're from Hoboken.
Yeah.
You want to give us a little background on where you came from, how you got
absolutely.
Here?
Sure.
That'd be fantastic.
So I was born in Italy 63 years ago, so I'm kind of a old guy, always in politics since I was a kid. Always, I remember 1977, I was fighting against the police at that time. I was a student in Italy. It was the time of all these big ideas, big stuff. The thing that happened is that a lot of American people, they have a strange idea what Western Europe is. And I can explain that, because when they talk about Europe, everybody talks about socialism, which is unbelievable. I don't know if I can use the word bullshit, but
yeah.
Go ahead.
You could say whatever you want in this
socialism
podcast.
Socialism is obviously a big word right now.
Okay. In the United States, it's practically is a sort of nightmare. I can understand why, because of the Cold War or whatever.
You're saying the term socialism
the term
is a
socialist,
nightmare for Americans.
But there is a lot of misinterpretation, a lot of ignorance about all this, because in reality, if we're looking at World War II, and I come from an anti-fascist family. My uncle was tortured and killed by the fascists. He was in the resistance and so on. So I grew up with this idea of freedom that many Americans think is something that they only have. While after World War II, as I said, in Western Europe, we had, as the United States had, a baby boom. We had a change. Actually, there was a time in the 60s and the 70s that the United States and Western Europe, they were working in parallel. They had kind of similar targets. When the people that were taxed, the 70%, 80%, the rich people.
To an American,
like
sounds
in Americans,
crazy right
it was
now.
Actually kind of a good time for the United States
it was.
As well. There was unions as well. So they went kind of in parallel. What's happened is that in the United States was Reagan arrived and destroyed absolutely everything, while in Europe, this thing continued to go. I'm not saying that Europe is immune from a lot of things, as we are noticing right now, for instance, with Brexit, with nationalism, and all the other stuff. But maybe World War II, that is something that Americans never experimented on themselves, while European they got, taught the European that when you see destruction, complete destruction, completely starvation and so on, everybody starts from scratch and everybody starts from zero.
Right.
It doesn't matter if you're rich, poor and so on.
Yeah.
So they build up a society that has these social services, as extremely important to have these. If you look at the democratic socialist structure, especially in Scandinavia, where I work with Scandinavian companies, or in Germany and so on, you see that practically the concept is very simple. You want to bring everybody until, let's say, the age of 18, 20, 25, at the same level. So give them everybody the same opportunity with school, with healthcare, and so on. And then you are on your own. So it's when I hear Pete Buttigieg calling democratic capitalism, or when I hear Bernie Sanders call it democratic socialism, for me it's exactly the same thing.
Sure.
I always work, for instance, for private companies. I never work in the public sector. So when I hear the word socialist, for me, I laugh, because that is absolutely meaningless for me. I work also for big companies, vice presidents in these companies. Then I moved to the United States. So I live in Italy, then I live in France, in the UK, and 18 years in the United States, and I'm also American citizen. I have two things in common with the Pete Buttigieg. The first one is I'm gay, and the second one, I speak more languages. So that's the two things that I have in common.
Typically, if you live anywhere outside of America, you speak more languages than your average American.
That's more or less it.
And you said you've got a lot in common with Pete.
Yes, I have a lot in common with Pete because...
and that's Pete Buttigieg.
Yeah,
you're a Pete Buttigieg fan.
Yeah, I became a bit Buttigieg fan considering myself a democratic socialist, which would be a big scandal for the Sanders people, but I also was a big Sanders fan. So I campaigned for Sanders in 2016. I voted for Sanders in 2016.
That's really important to know.
Like, it's very important.
Can we ask why?
Why? Because I think that Sanders and Warren and Buttigieg, but I explain in a different way, I will explain you why. They have the same target. When I hear, for instance, them talking about universal healthcare, Medicare for all, free tuition colleges, all the other things, for me it's normal. I live that. I pay $250 a year for college.
Wow.
I pay $15 for a surgery in Paris. So it's something that in the United States you don't even. And also the other bullshit, I want to add this, that you have to stay in line to have care in Europe is ridiculous, because I have, with my partner here, I have a quite good insurance, and if I want to look for a specialist, I have to wait a month to be anywhere.
That's completely correct. That's a great point.
But you wouldn't know that if all you watch is Fox News.
No.
The talking point is that socialists wait online.
You stay in line in Europe. It's not true. Actually, you go to the hospital, then you don't pay a copay. You don't pay $3,000 for an ambulance, for instance. That's another point. And the other reality is that, okay, if it's not urgent, you stay in line waiting 30 minutes, 40 minutes, 1 hour, and then you see the doctor.
Right.
Whatever doctor you want, any specialist you want. Here, no. Here, I called insurance, and I have two doctor appointments in October.
Yeah, specialists, you gotta...
Specialists.
It's not as easy as just walking.
You need a referral half the time.
You need a referral. So
you gotta pay your doctor to get that referral.
Correct.
Exactly.
So, instinctively, Warren and Sanders would be my choice. And if they win, of course, the primary will be my choice.
Right.
And I will be happy to campaign for them. But there is a big problem that I discovered after I campaigned for Sanders as democratic socialist. Because I lived in Europe and knowing that there everything is easy, there is no private, there are private insurance, but they have a minor role. The structure in Europe grew up for 40, 50 years after World War II in a way that this kind of services are given.
Right.
So the normal candidate, if we were in Sweden, it would be Warren or Sanders.
Okay.
In the United States, no. In the United States, you have to go step by step, because you can't. If you tell someone you will lose your insurance, they will kill you.
Right. They'll freak out.
They freak out. I know that there is a huge enthusiasm that a lot of people are so exasperated because they pay too much, they go bankrupt, and they want big changes. But you have to also be rational. And what I liked in Pete Buttigieg is that differentiate him enormously from Biden and the others is that Biden, for instance, he wants to remain in his own position, like I'm Obama. I will give a public option, but in this, all these people, they still believe in the success of the private insurances.
Right.
Pete Buttigieg, no. He said, no, my target is exactly the same target. Actually, was last interview that he had was really cool. My target, the same target of Sanders and Warren. I want to have Medicare for all, and I want to have these kind of services, but I want to give the possibility to the American people to choose, to test the service first,
yes.
So they leave their insurance, the private insurance that is a fraud, and they start moving, there is a movement towards the public service that become more and more popular. Because I believe, having lived here 18 years, having lived in Europe for 44 years, that there is no way with the kind of structure that our Congress has. And not to talk about every state take their own decision. Just think about the fact that Obamacare has been almost destroyed in a lot of red states.
Sure. Yes.
So you arrive at the point in which think, okay, the man that will be the president of the United States must be a person that, first of all, is a calm one.
That should be pretty easy, comparatively yeah. speaking.
Correct. And has to be someone that... can step by step move stuff. It's also important to understand that this is not just the election of the president, this is also the election of the Senate, the election of the Congress,
right.
Local election, governors, state elections, and not to talk about the judges and so on. So it's much more a constitutional change we need.
So you're saying absolutely. That you're gravitating towards him because you think his plan to move off the type of healthcare we have is more realistic because there's steps to it.
Yeah.
As opposed to just saying, I get elected tomorrow, it's free healthcare and your private insurance is done, and we would riot.
Probably. The point is that to have all these things, you need to have a huge amount of people behind you. And reality is that in the United States, you don't.
Yeah.
You don't have, if you go in UK, if you go in Germany or in France or in Italy or in Sweden, and you tell them, it doesn't matter if you are a conservative or if you are a liberal or Democrat, whatever you want to call it, I will change your health care. For them matters.
Yeah.
It's something that took years to change. In the United States, the problem is that the people has been so terrified by the word socialism. And to be honest, a lot of presidents, they betrayed them on many things. So people that, if you're telling them, and already the Affordable Care Act was a problem for many people.
Oh, yeah. So people are rightfully, I agree that some people are suspicious of the government.
Absolutely.
And I can't blame them.
And before we jump in to really on the healthcare and we get off the socialist topic. Mm. One of the biggest things that he said for me, and I just wonder if it resonated with you, in one of his speeches, he said, no matter what we do, it's going to be called socialist. No matter what our policies are. And his response to it still resonates with me more than anything that's happened so far. He said, you know, let's do the right thing. Let's let them call it socialist. But if it's the right thing to do by the people, let's back it. And, you know, did that resonate with you?
Was absolutely. The point is that I cannot count on Trump supporters to change their mind, that they will not change their mind. There are many other reasons why we lost. Hillary lost the elections. I don't want even, that the list is so long that I don't want to even talk about that.
Yeah, we don't need to relitigate it at this point.
Correct. But I think that this is actually a very good point. They will continue to call socialists. No matter what. I try to explain, as I'm telling to you, having lived there, and I mean a person that I consider
you
myself
a more socialist.
Correct. Yeah. I consider myself a more democratic socialist than Sanders. That would be a huge scandal for whoever is a Sanders supporter is listening to me right now. But I lived that.
Right.
Sanders, he didn't live
that. It's amazing to hear. I'll tell you, it's eye opening.
I live all that, and I believe strongly in democratic socialism. I strongly believe in that. But I lived that, so I know what it means. And when I hear these people, when I explain, I lived 44 years, a reality that you are not knowing. And these Trump supporters, they continue to come back to me. Oh, you are a socialist. There is a barrier, there is a wall that I'm not interested in destroying.
Not only that, it's crazy to me that you mentioned how candidates like Warren and Sanders, if they ran in Western Europe, would be more centrist or considered centrist by comparison.
Oh.
And it just goes to show how far right-leaning the standard is in America, comparatively speaking, to the world.
But it's ridiculous because, in my opinion, there is no left. There is a right, and there is a center-left in the United States. There is no left in the United States.
Can I ask you something? Do you still have family or friends that are in the places you lived in Europe?
Yes, I have my mother, my sister. And
how do they feel looking in on this right now?
Well, the point is that right now they have their own issues.
So they don't, that makes a lot of sense.
What's happening in Italy right now? Wherever you go and you talk about the Trump, to conservative and to liberals in Western Europe, because I would like to distinguish Western Europe from Eastern Europe.
Very fair.
Now is because it's a big difference.
100%.
A huge difference the way they grew up. And I would like to distinguish the things. Even if, for instance, I just saw a picture of the lesbian prime minister of Serbia that met the gay prime minister of Luxembourg, and we still don't have a woman as a president or gays are treated this way.
Ireland, of all places. Yeah.
Okay. So we are talking about, for me, it's like a climate change, the same thing. I was.
That was your 2 point. How do you feel about that?
Okay, that's another very funny thing. Because last night I was watching Trevor Noah, and he had the interview with the Greta Thunberg, the young 16 Swedish girl that's now
that just paddled across the Atlantic.
He asked exactly the same question. What's the feeling of climate change there and here? And I already knew the way she was going to answer, and the answer was very clear. She said, here, people are still debating if it exists or not. There...
To be fair, most of us are not.
Yeah. There, there is no doubt, there is not even discussing that it exists. It's a fact.
It exists, right. Yeah.
And we just need to act in different way and speed up. And she said a sentence that for me was very important, because she said the grown-ups, the adults, talks about we owe you this, we have hope for you. And she replied very calmly, I don't need your hope. I want you panic.
Yeah. Yes.
I want you to feel what I feel, because this is will be my world. You will be dead in a few years, and this is the place where I will live.
Yeah.
She's a pretty inspirational figure.
It's very, very inspirational figure.
It's sad that we've gotten to that point where fear and panic is the only thing that motivates a lot of people.
Yeah.
And we see it on the left in America too, where a lot of people sat out the 2016 election.
Yep.
A lot of people don't vote in this country.
And a lot of people don't vote, and some people, they maybe because of the famous Russian bot, whatever, they create hostilities inside the left.
Left versus certainly. But it takes something like this. It takes something like Donald Trump being president to stir up enough emotion and fear on the left to actually get them involved in politics, which is a shame, but I'm happy that it has stirred those emotions in enough people that it seems like people are taking an interest, following the news more than they used to, and getting involved in their communities, whether it's at a local or state level, because those elections matter too, greatly.
For the mayor of Hoboken, not for the elected one, for another guy that was campaigning for, because I believe in politics. Now I am part of the LGBTQ caucus for the Hudson County.
Oh, that's awesome.
Amazing.
So I believe, because I lived my entire life in politics, because everything we do is politics, is political. No matter what people tell you, everything has a meaning that has an impact on our life. If you don't take responsibility by yourself and delegate to someone else, it's your fault if something wrong happens.
And I mean, you know, it's unfortunate because, like, you know, we brought up Facebook there and what happened in the last election. And I have grandparents that live in Michigan, and they get bad information and they're still fully on board with Trump, no matter, I mean, I'm involved in this, I'm very passionate about it, and nothing I could say is going to swing what they see daily on their newsfeed.
Because just, they have Fox News and it's a source of information. I mean, I can understand your grandparent to some extent. I don't.
I love them, but I'm
just, no, I understand the fact that their generation, they don't use social media or broadcast or other stuff. They only watch TV.
Yeah.
And a lot and of if they have, most of them, they only watch one channel.
And so, even if you use social media, it's an echo chamber, right?
Yes.
If you only follow the people that you care about, I've all of a sudden got a lot of right and Republican things. Just when people I follow, I think, are retweeting it. And it's kind of opened my eyes a little bit that, wow, I wasn't seeing the right thing. But you brought up a really great point about climate change. And, you know, we have a lot of candidates that are older.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this is not meant to be a Pete Buttigieg, you know, this is what we're behind. But I think it matters his age.
Absolutely.
Because he's pointed out a lot of times that when he is Donald Trump's age, this is what's going to be happening. And, you know, we're not in the point, like you pointed out very succinctly, we're not at the point anymore where we can mess around for 8 years and then try to figure it out. Like, this is a right now thing. And
yeah,
a lot of countries and the places you visited know that. This is emergency. And we're now treating it, because of our current president, that it's they're denying science. And we know now we have a red line. And it's sometime between 8 and 15 years.
If I can add something to what you just said, I put the meme that I created on Facebook that was related about the age, and I'm 62, so actually I'm legitimate to talk about age more than other people that criticize the age of people that are older.
Right.
So I look at myself a person that I cannot really run for office. I can contribute to a lot of things. And then I make a calculation. January 2021, Elizabeth Warren will be 72.
Right.
Donald Trump, 75. Bernie Sanders, 77. And finally, Joe Biden, 78.
This is a problem.
Are we going, in a situation like this, to have candidates that there is a big risk that they are one-term president? And I thought about this. I think that their contribution could be wonderful, even as cabinets, in a lot of positions that they can have, Secretary of State or other things that they can have. But as a president of the United States, especially now that we want to have a long term, as Pete Buttigieg said, don't win the election, win the era. It means that you want to have something that have a long haul, something that lasts long. And I don't want to have a candidate that has to be changed after 4 years.
Can I ask you,
for age,
would you be on board with one of these candidates you're behind having somebody like Harris or Buttigieg as the vice president with the direction that they would take over after 4 years?
I think yes. And actually, there was someone that is an analyst, political analyst, that said something very important, which is if you have a candidate that is a progressive or progressive-like, whatever, it's very important that you try to have also a vice president that is a little bit more moderate.
Like if it was Warren and Buttigieg.
Warren and Buttigieg, I always dream for.
Sign me up for that ticket.
Yeah, everyone, I'm not putting that together, but if
Harris and Buttigieg.
Not spoken, but it's like, listen, 4 years and then 4 years. Or 8 years. Or
8 years, yeah. Vice president can run and it doesn't count.
Oh, 8 years doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Being that you backed Bernie for a small amount of time, would you be on board with him getting this seat as long as he had the right successor behind him and knew that he wasn't going to do this until he was 85 years old? Because I think you made the best point, and I think we've talked about it here. Age matters here. It just really does. And, you know, we don't want to put everything in the Trump spectrum, but there's been a lot of reports out there just on, like, you know, it's how you mentally handle things. This is not an easy job.
No.
Like, it's not something that a 21-year-old should do, and it's probably not something a 71-year-old should do.
And I'm scared.
You have to be about all of your, not to be like, we shouldn't be talking about if you should drive a car. You gotta run the country.
And as much as I believe that Joe Biden is an extremely smart guy, and Bernie Sanders is extremely, but I notice that they do missteps. I start having this moment of absence, mental absence, I don't know. And this worries me a lot. And this is nothing disrespectful towards the two candidates, because, as I said, I will vote Democrat no matter what. But this worries me a lot. In a moment like this, where we really need to take strong decisions, you need to have a candidate that has the stamina and, but also the physical capability to be so strong and so quick that you have to keep the country united and to do whatever is important. Yeah. That's the only thing that really worries me. As part for that, I will, if they are the candidate, I will vote for them in a heartbeat. Of course, I have my priorities. So my priority one is Pete Buttigieg. Then I have Warren Sanders. And then I have Harris. And then
Kevin got to touch on it. You raise a great
Cory Booker, I don't know.
There's got to be some worries in the age range. It just does.
So I'll play a little devil's advocate here, where, and I'm not a Biden supporter, but I have done a lot of research into his previous campaigns, and they've all actually been kind of derailed by a lot of these similar style gaffes that he's had in his career. And so I wonder if it's not so much him a mental decline as is he's just a weird guy that messes up a lot. Doesn't make him a better candidate, but I wonder in the if we put this into the context of an argument about stamina and mental health and how fit you are mentally, I always wonder if that's a fair assessment to make of him. Because he's always kind of been that off-the-cuff guy that speaks too quickly for his brain to catch up, like his mouth is moving too quickly.
And before you go, I think a lot of this, and a lot of this was hidden behind the force of will Obama had. It was just so magnetic and so out there that Biden didn't have to be anything more than what he was.
It's interesting because Obama, like, you bring up Obama and the force, the magnetism that he had.
The force of will.
He was our, compared to George Bush, you got this guy that comes in as a rock star filling up stadiums worth of people.
Your point's
and
right on.
And we saw that taken in the complete opposite direction with Donald Trump, who can, like, if he can do one thing well, it's attract a crowd.
Well, not like
I don't know
well,
if last
yeah, it's a little different now.
I don't know if last night you had the opportunity to see a segment that was kind of a surprise on MSNBC, Ari Melber, that is doing segment about the past of the candidates. Last night, I strongly suggest you to watch it.
Sure.
He compared Pete Buttigieg to Barack Obama. They have the same background.
There's a lot of links.
I was surprised by because Ari Melber is the kind of person that interviewed every candidate but Pete Buttigieg, and his analysis was spot on. The way he the behavior, and the charismatic attitude, and that's actually one of coming back on the other point. Why Bernie Sanders was so successful in 2016? Because he was charismatic.
Yeah, it goes a long way.
Biden is not. Biden has a problem of charisma zero for a lot of people. And I honestly believe that he won't be the candidate.
He will not.
He will not, because if you make just a little bit of math.
No, the numbers have dropped.
And also, if you add together Warren and Sanders together, and you put also Buttigieg, because the Buttigieg, I prefer to Warren.
Of course.
Or Harris, or whatever.
Pete's hanging right behind just as much as he should, but you just hit on
phase three.
Biden.
Right. Well, that's if you're tiering these people, then
when
that's
when we started this, the biggest thing was electability. Because most of us, this podcast included, our producer, most importantly, was most concerned about getting Trump out. And, you know, we did a podcast earlier, and me and Kevin were talking about ethics and how to win this. And I threw him a question. I said, you know, the Republicans don't give a shit about how this happens. They're just making it happen. Should we change it? And he said, no, let's win this. And I think the biggest thing we've seen now is that we can't win it just by going halfway. And I think Biden's halfway. I think we're saying, like, all right, here's our 71-year-old that's going to get you back to Obama, kind of. We're going to just kind of switch back a little bit. And I think if you watch the polls, and you can speak better to this, I think the country's seeing that. They're like, we don't want to go back, kind of.
Yeah, this is actually supported by the numbers.
Yeah, 100%.
Because if you look at the election of 2008, Barack Obama, I'm talking about December, January 2007, 2008, just mm-hmm. before the primary.
Right.
He was 15 points behind Hillary Clinton.
Absolutely. Correct. Yeah.
And he has a visible, how do you call it?
Name recognition
around the 70-75%.
Yeah. So right. He had room to grow. And
Pete Buttigieg
and he grew.
Today has 50% name recognition.
Now let's be
first Joe Biden, who is probably saturated.
And it has been.
Let's be really fair, though.
What?
Obama was a cult of personality. That maybe the best speaker we've ever had. He really brought people in. And I'm not downplaying Pete because I'm a huge fan. But that's a once-in-a-lifetime type candidate. Obama was just so good on the microphone and with people. Like, we can't rely... My point is, we can't rely on Pete to win this on a cult of personality
situation. What I'm trying to say is this one is too early to talk anyway.
100%.
Oh, definitely.
We have no idea what we're talking about.
I mean, with this number, we are 5 months away from the primaries.
Yep.
And tons that we have debates and changes that could happen, missteps from candidates. I mean, there are tons of things that can happen in this next months. That everybody is in place. But honestly, I see much less in place today. I think I see only four candidates. Even Kamala Harris is going down. And the reason why is because Biden, Warren, Sanders, and Buttigieg, they had the money to create structures behind them. The phase three of Pete Buttigieg that he opened 20...
He's killing it.
He's killing it. But the same thing happened. Biden has a lot of money behind that, and they have a lot of people there. But also Sanders, because he was already
he's
there.
Burning, yeah.
He built it.
And Warren, that has a lot of sustain. These are the four candidates that they have money. They have the possibility to create have offices in New Hampshire, in Iowa, in South Carolina.
And they're
and
taking
gone.
A page out of Obama's book because you need that grassroots in addition to the money. And unfortunately, that's just the reality of politics in this
country.
And
there is the enthusiasm also. Behind these three candidates, not Biden, but these three candidates that I mentioned, Sanders, Warren, Buttigieg, there is a huge enthusiasm. People want to fight. People want to campaign. The other one, I don't see the same.
Yeah.
I don't see for Booker. I don't even see for Beto O'Rourke. I see a big fan group in Texas.
Yeah.
And he will definitely win in Texas. But nationwide, no.
Oh, and his polling shows it.
Is there anybody outside of who we talked about that you're looking at tonight that might surprise you? Is there anybody you're just like, maybe on the outskirts, or maybe not somebody you're really invested in right now that you're really curious about what they're going to say?
Andrew Young.
Okay. That's perfect.
Yep.
Andrew Young is the only one because he's out of Washington.
Okay.
I was a couple of days ago, there was an interview with the mayor of Dayton, and there was also the mayor together with the mayor of Pittsburgh. Talking about their...
the mass shootings that
mass
occurred.
Mass shooting and so on. And they said something that actually is very important because she's a big supporter of Pete Buttigieg. She already endorsed him. But forget this for a moment. They say, Mayor, we see the blood. We are there. We know what's going on and we have to take decision. We cannot print money. We have to deal with situation on the spot. Senators... they don't. So we feel what is happening. They don't. They don't have this.
Why do you feel Andrew Yang is the one you want to hear?
Because he doesn't belong to Washington. Okay. This is also another important part for several people that they had enough. I mean, if you look at the reality, there are people, I'm not one to blame neither Warren nor Sanders nor Harris, none of them.
Yeah, like what do you like? What
whatever.
Do you like about Yang's
But the point
approach?
Is that unfortunately, what a lot of people see is that you've been in Washington for so many years and nothing really changed. Because
it was the Trump burned down the deal, right?
Yeah, but also before Trump, also during the Obama era, Obama allowed actually to lose the super majority in the Senate,
yeah.
Which was a big deal. And I'm not surprised that someone that comes from outside, either a mayor or an entrepreneur, could have an impact. I think that Andrew Yang, for me, is much more interesting than Steyer.
Than Tom Steyer, right?
Because he's buying his access practically to the debate,
and still polling at zero.
How do you
actually? We'll be in the next debate.
Yeah,
Kevin,
unfortunately.
Do you feel anything about Yang?
I think he is an exciting candidate. Again, for what you were just saying, Massimo, that Andrew Yang is that outsider that I could see attracting Trump supporters, people that were attracted to Trump not by. The
just
racism
the
and all the terrible part.
Supporters.
But the whole distrust of Washington and the idea that we need someone from outside that is also an actual
Yang
successful businessman to go out there and quote-unquote fix things. And Yang's just got a personality to him with very little name recognition. So he has – the ceiling is still very
yeah,
high.
He's
for him
like
right
in
now.
There.
And,
like Pitt.
And I know he's not polling super high. He's in the single digits. But again, his name recognition is not anywhere near these other candidates. And he's making the debates. And he's put on a good show outside of probably the first debate, actually. I'll say he was kind of weak. But he's doing all right.
In the Hill poll, he actually got better than Pete Buttigieg, 5% against 4%.
Right.
And in New Hampshire, when they say... Biden versus candidate, he was practically at the same level of Biden to beat Trump.
Yeah.
The only problem that I have with Yang is the fact that he never talked about the public, he almost talked about the private. As if the private sector is the only one that solves the solution.
It's
and
the one he came
from.
Me. Yeah.
And that scares me because a lot of people that are terrified by the word socialism, without, as I said at the beginning, knowing what it means, they could still be attracted by a candidate that is so much into the private sector and so on. And this is one of the things that turned me off about Andrew Yang.
Well, we look forward to watching these debates tonight with you.
Thank you.
Getting some more feedback. At the end, we'll wrap up and see if we've changed any minds today after we listen to these candidates on stage. Massimo, thank you so much for
thank
joining
you for
us.
Having
it's been a
me.
Pleasure.
Thank
I
you.
Hope you'll come back on a
Absolutely.
Future episode. All right, thank
Bye-bye.
You. If you want to follow the Drinking Liberally podcast on social media, you can do so on Twitter and Instagram at @drinking_libpod. You can check out our website, www.drinkingliberallypod.com. And of course, rate and review us wherever you find podcasts. We truly appreciate everyone that's already done so. That's all for this week. Talk to you next. Cheers.